BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Sometimes a song is so embedded within us that we don't know or think about where it came from and what it does to us. Those nursery rhymes that still make our fingers and toes tickle. The seemingly simple lullabies that continue to stir something in us. But what if their melodies, notes, lilting lyrics hold a little more than we think? Like this. This lullaby, Cradle Song, Vegan Lied, written and composed by Johannes Brahms and first published in 1868. Hidden in its simplicity are the complexities of the heart. Brahms wrote it for an old flame, Bertha, on the arrival of her second son. He wrote, "She will find it quite in order that while she is singing Hans to sleep, a love song is being sung to her." Because hidden in the counter melody is a different song, an Austrian waltz that Bertha used to sing to Brahms during their love affair. Perhaps inside a lot of songs for the cradle are love songs to ourselves. What do some of our earliest experiences of music really do to us all? I'm India Rackerson, and you're listening to Child from BBC Radio 4. Episode 25, Lullaby.
It's not new, the idea that music is a powerful means.
No.
That supports social bonding, that supports well-being.
I was going to say, it's kind of a tale as old as time, isn't it? The idea that music is feeds something of your soul.
Exactly.
This is Nina Politimu, a lecturer in the Institute of Education at UCL. And what she's interested in is the impact of music on the learning and emotions of babies and the well-being of mothers and carers. We start off by chatting about the musicality that we all seem to use with babies.
Instinctively, a lot of caregivers will sing to their babies, but they will also speak in a more musical manner. And this is what we call infant-directed speech. Huh. So infant-directed speech has musical characteristics. The vowels are elongated, the pauses are longer, there are more exaggerated pitch variations, pitch modulations, and it's much more emotional.
Can I be clear? When you're talking about infant-directed speech, you're talking about like baby talk.
Baby talk.
Like, oh, hello you.
Exactly.
How are you doing?
So instinctively, when we talk to babies, we all go like that. Uh-huh. Hello, little baby. Mm-hmm. And everybody does it instinctively, so that's interesting.
That's interesting.
And it's a universal type of talk. So it has been observed across cultures.
And there's good reason for this. It's not just that everyone's just gone really gooey.
And there is a vast amount of literature looking at this musicality in infant-directed speech actually supports language development because it helps babies perceive the vowels and the boundaries between words more easily. They will use cues in the speech to segment words and extract words from the sound stream. So they will use the pauses.
Okay.
They will use the elongation towards the end of the words.
Famous experiments also showed that babies as young as 8 months old can calculate the statistical probability of a particular word or vowel or musical note following on from another.
And there has been this idea about how they are very impressive, high-end statistical machines that are able to perceive these fine regularities.
They're watching you.
They are watching you.
And it seems that they've been listening from the very get-go.
And the rhythm and the melody that we hear in speech is perceived in the womb. And we know that because there has been research showing that infant cry vocalizations might actually mirror prosody of their native language. So when they are born, their cry will follow the pitch contours of their native language.
Wow.
So it makes sense that when we sing to babies, they're keen to hear, especially to infant-directed song, which is more emotional. It uses much more social interaction through exaggerated faces, more smiles from the adults, and it's just a joyous way to learn.
We have evidence showing that higher frequency of musical interactions, and particularly singing, and especially in the first year, is related with better word comprehension, in babies between 8 and 11 months old.
Learning words quickly, well, that's all fine. But there are other ways music helps babies too.
The idea that music supports social bonding is not new. More recently, and with the development of music psychology, there have been empirical data as well showing how music can indeed help with empathy. And it makes sense if you think about it, because music making is a lot about responding to the cues of others. Through playing music, babies look more into the eyes of their caregivers, and they synchronize this looking around the beats of the singing. They might be synchronizing their vocalizations with their caregivers' vocalizations, but also their facial movements and their gestures.
And singing regulates emotions, everyone's emotions.
So obviously we use lullabies to soothe the babies, we use play songs to make them more interesting, and also it regulates our arousal and it makes us feel more bonded with our babies. There has also been research specifically with mothers with symptoms of postnatal depression here in the UK, showing that it can increase this sense of bonding with their baby and self-efficacy, and in some cases, lower some of the symptoms of postnatal depression.
Because singing does feel good, right?
But what if you're just not a very good singer?
It doesn't matter at all.
You
get this question all the time. It's definitely okay if you sing badly. In Western cultures in general, music seems to be something that only musically trained people will do.
Yeah.
Whereas it's not the same in all cultures. We can all sing and we can all play music.
Part of Nina's work has looked at how musical interventions could help the well-being of mothers. And I'm keen to see that in action myself. So we head to join a class I've heard a lot about in a small village in East Sussex.
I like to prepare the space, put the chairs out, put the tea and snacks out. And they'll start coming in. There's no such thing as late.
What even is late as well when you're a mum?
There's no such thing.
In the village hall, as we set up our kit, women of all sorts of ages start coming in. Many of them with kids, babes in arms, toddlers making a beeline for the soft mats and toys in the middle of the circle. People are hugging, greeting, handing out warm cups filled from the urn.
I always start the session with some very simple singing.
The women start to sing, following this lady, Kate Valentine.
So you won't find any sheet music, you won't find any auditions. There's no technical musical jargon around different parts. And it's taught by I sing something, the group sings it back to me.
Some sit with a friend, some stand alone, eyes closed, open, some are feeding babies.
So one of the principles of Singing Mamas is actively letting mums know they can show up exactly as they are. Mm.
And the sound and the lyrics are more powerful than I expected.
I didn't expect to cry a lot and then not be able to sing because I thought I might cry.
It's very hard to explain to people what they're coming into.
This group, Singing Mamas, started many moons ago. Kate Valentine was a single mum working as a nurse and desperate for a bit of an outlet. She told a friend how much she wanted to find a group where she could just sing, that would not only accept her without any musical training, but also her three children of different ages.
And she told me that she'd found one. And I walked into the room and there were eight mums and babies. And I looked around the room and noticed everyone was looking at me. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, Catherine, she's done a number on you.
She has.
Yeah.
All prim and proper, she looked. And she said, "You know a few songs, don't you, Kate?" I just learned on the job and I kept it going around my nursing job. I started to look at the statistics, noticing that mums are just not okay. Mums that are suffering from things like postnatal depression, 70% will downplay the severity of those symptoms anyway.
Yeah.
Kate saw how singing was helping the mums in her groups, helping them bond with each other and with their babies.
was such a passion and felt really purposeful. So I was looking out to sea one night and I thought, how am I going to do this? How am I going to recover from my night shifts? And it just dropped in like a stone. Singing Mamas has to be free and funded and referred to every new and expectant mum. So I thought, okay, I better scale up and set to it.
Who's this little squiggly one on your knee?
This is Audrey.
Hi, Audrey.
And since then, that was about 6 or 7 years ago, I've just been going for it. And it's such a clear mission. It will happen.
So there were lots of spaces, actually, where it was about the baby. There'd been an absence of that for me. So there'd been the kind of, who am I? Where am I in this process?
We have over 200 leaders now. We're in 8 different countries. We've got more than 2,000 women every week in the UK accessing groups.
In some areas, NHS services are now actually referring to or prescribing Singing Mamas. And funding through various routes is often available to help women attend.
I think certainly this time around, it's been even more of a kind of lifeline for me.
Expressing, keep getting it out, keep getting it out.
Lots of different faces as well,
yeah.
Different ages. I would love to have gone to a group,
yeah,
where it wasn't just, yeah, new mums.
Yes, that's intentional.
I'm nuts about babies and I wouldn't have thought that I could come to this group until my daughter joined it.
That's when the magic really starts to happen, because it takes a village to raise a baby. And when that new mum comes in, if there's a spare pair of arms or a spare pair of eyes to notice, someone will make that mum a cup of tea. And there's enough people to notice what's needed, and the support is incredible.
Have you seen it help?
Oh, it actually brings up some big feelings for me.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
I can really see that.
Some people say they wouldn't be here. With some of our own prescription programmes, we know that women are coming with really serious bonding issues where they haven't been able to make eye contact with their baby.
Mm.
And in the group, it's where they first experience it. In fact, the babies look straight up to their mums. Their mums are singing. And their faces say it all. And the mums look back at that and they see it. One woman told me she has 2 children with special needs. She's a single mum. And she said she saw her children seeing her for the first time. This is a mum that gives everything and doesn't even breathe properly until she comes singing. And she said she thought maybe that her children felt pride too for the first time.
I loved, what was that song we sang right at the beginning? It was like sort of, whatever's going on right now is going on right now. What were the words?
May I be open to things as they are right now, because this is the way things are right now.
That's the one that just made me cry.
Simple, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so simple, but it's just such a like great thing to have and to say to yourself.
Yeah. Right now, because this
is the way things are. I'm India Axon, and you've been listening to Child. This episode was produced by me and Georgia Arundel. Child is a Listen production for BBC Radio 4.
From BBC Radio 4, life can be unexpected.
It was big. This was not a wind, this was not a storm, this was a tsunami.
But when confronted with change, humans are remarkably resilient.
I knew in that moment, as I fell to the ground, that I would recover more.
I'm Dr. Sian Williams, psychologist and presenter of Life Changing, the programme that speaks to people whose worlds have been flipped upside down and transformed in a moment.
If I had to live my life again, would I ever want to go through what I went through? There's a very simple answer to that. I would go through it again.
Subscribe to Life Changing on BBC Sounds.